having parties and they're having like, you know, crazy cakes and,
yeah,
you know,
which I don't understand at all.
I don't think it should be made into that big of a day.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It shouldn't be this cultural sort of symbol of our life. A lot of people that commit suicide on birthdays is because they're lonely.
Yeah. Right?
They're alone. They don't have a social life. They don't have a family life. They don't have, like, I think one of the countries that you, I don't know if you mentioned this, but it was Japan, which is one of the highest suicide rates on birthdays, for example. If you look at Japanese society and culture, they're very lonely people. They don't get married. They don't have very good family lives.
They're isolated individuals.
Yeah, so there's a lot more than just the birthdays. Birthdays are just like the accumulation
of reason.
All that. Yeah, it's like the trigger.
It's just an excuse.
Yeah. So what is my value? What is the intention of me being here and these people? Then there is no difference between me being here and not being here. And they will go on. And after the time that I will be dead, they will eat their food. They will drink. They will
exactly.
go to bathroom.
Life would go on.
Whatever. Life goes on. And this is the main point. I think that would triggers people. That will trigger people into suicidal thoughts. But the point that my brother mentioned, that these people have actually some serious problems. It doesn't matter whether on their birthdays or their routine days, they have some problems. They have some difficulties.
Yeah.
And,
so the problems are just more than just a day.
Exactly.
It's so, deeper than that. It's maybe some mental issues and trauma. Yeah. So we have to go and dip the reasons behind that. There was a story by Edgar Allan Poe, which was called The Mask of the Red Death. It's a very beautiful story for everyone who hasn't been through that story. I would highly recommend that because it gives you a lot of ideas upon life. And there was a mansion, a big mansion, in which there existed many rooms. Each room symbolized each phase of your life. One room was painted in green, and that pretty much naturally represents your youth. And then another room with the color red, which represents your youth, the time in which you're so energetic and you have so much of enthusiasm for life. And another one in black, which seems the last part of your life, the last phase, which is death and whatever. And then there was a clock in that mansion. Every time that clock started ticking so heavily, as a result, all the people who were in that mansion, by the way, there was a party in that house. So it's like Earth and all the people are having a party in this world. And then every time that clock started hitting, it was a moment in which all the people in this mansion started silent. They stopped doing anything, as if you're going to ponder upon whatever that happens in life. It was symbolized as the event in which somebody dies, and then we all go through a pondering phase, and we start thinking about our own death. Yeah. So maybe that could be applied to birthdays as well. Maybe the birthdays are just like those clocks that were ticking in that mansion.
Nice example.
It just makes us think more about our death, about what we have done, what we are going to do with our life, or what is going to happen after there is no more of my birthday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. But that story that birthdays are depressing side. I think we have to change this actual problem into opportunity.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
If birthdays are depressing for you, then choose these days as some, I don't know, new start, as some days that you are planning for the rest of your life.
I would say that human beings are, as individuals, each one of us has got too much of weaknesses, has got too much of scars in our soul, and we're beautiful with these things because that's the thing that makes me unique. That's the thing that makes me different from you, from every single person in this world. There's only one edition of me in this world.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting thing to think about. Instead of focusing on the dark parts, we can look at it from this perspective. With all the problems that I have, with all the weaknesses that I have, with all the scars that I've been through, still, there's only one of me in this world. So still, there's a hope for you to think optimistically about whatever that is going to happen and that is going to be done by you
exactly.
in this life. See the things as they are and do not add too much of spice to everything. Yeah, that was all. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
In the limelight.
Zionist regime forces have recently killed 7 Palestinians from same family during Jenin raid. Witnesses say the young men had gathered at the city entrance to watch Israeli regime forces withdraw when they were targeted. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli regime forces killed 7 Palestinians during an early morning operation in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin recently, all cousins, including 2 sets of brothers. An Israeli regime drone strike targeted a group of young men who had gathered to watch the Zionist regime forces withdrawing from the area. According to witnesses, the 7 young cousins included 4 brothers, Hazza, 27, Rami, 22, Ahmad, 24, and Allah Darvish Asus, in addition to brothers Muhammad and Wadi Yasser Asus and their relative Rezkullah Nabil Asus. The mother of the 4 brothers lamented at her son's funeral, saying, "I lost everything. I have nothing left. My house is now empty." The airstrike took place near the entrance of Jenin in the area called Martyrs Triangle. Mahmoud Assadi, director of the Red Crescent in Jenin, told Middle East Eye that his crews moved as soon as they heard the sound of a strong explosion in the area. The crews arrived at the scene to find 6 people dead with their bodies torn apart, and a critically wounded young man, Wadi Asus, 18, was pronounced dead at the hospital 2 hours later. He added, "The Israeli army was not present at the scene because the raid was approximately 6 kilometers away from the site of the massacre." Confrontations broke out after the Zionist regime's incursion into the city. During the raid, an Israeli regime police officer was killed and 3 others were wounded after their vehicle was hit by an explosive device, the Israeli regime military said. The Jenin Brigade, a local armed resistance group, claimed responsibility for the attack on the Zionist regime forces. Mohammad Asus, a relative of the victims, said that their homes are close to the main street through which the Zionist regime military vehicles passed during raids on Jenin. "It was 5 a.m. and the young men were sitting around a fire they had lit to keep warm when the Zionist regime drones flew low over the city. Hours later, the army stormed the city." Muhammad told Middle East Eye, "We were sleeping when suddenly we heard the sound of a strong explosion that shook the house. We went out running in the streets to the site of the explosion and found terrible scenes." The strike had left bodies of all the young men in pieces. Muhammad found a headless body among them and began screaming when he realized that it was his nephew, Rezgullah Asus. The four brothers had been in Jordan with their father before they moved to the West Bank years ago. They worked in construction and selling vegetables in the occupied territories before the war on Gaza started, but had lost their jobs after the Zionist regime's authorities banned Palestinian workers from entering the occupied territories. Their father was not able to attend the funeral to bid farewell to his sons due to the Zionist regime's restrictions on entry into the West Bank. He observed the funeral via video call. Muhammad said all seven were unarmed. It was clear that they were sitting and talking. This is a horrific crime that we cannot forget. We used to see these scenes on television, and today we saw them as a reality among our children. Journalist Raya Arugh from Jenin lives only 500 meters from the site of the attack, and she woke up to the sound of the explosion. She told MEE, "The scene was horrific. Screaming, the sound of ambulances, mothers crying, and the smell of blood filled the place." Arugh said Israeli regime forces have deliberately targeted gatherings of Palestinians in Jenin without justification since the war started. Arugh said, "A few days after the start of the war on Gaza, an Israeli drone targeted a group of Palestinians in the Martyr Cemetery in Jenin and killed a number of them. After that, this tactic was used several times, to the point that when the army storms Jenin, people call on each other not to have gatherings." She believes the attacks are aimed at increasing pressure on Jenin, a popular incubator of the Palestinian resistance. She said, "Israel is trying to kill Palestinians in Jenin, not arrest them, and this was clear in many recent attacks. Young people are being bombed simply for gathering." At least 327 Palestinians have been martyred in the West Bank by either the Zionist regime forces or settlers since the start of the war. Meanwhile, a Wafa news agency reported colonial Zionist settlers recently assaulted a Palestinian citizen while he was near the city of Umm al-Fahm in the Palestinian territories, occupied since 1948, according to medical and local sources. Medical sources at Ibn Sina Hospital said colonialists attacked a young man, Ehsan Sabna, a resident of the village of Fahma, south of Jenin, leading him to sustain a broken thumb and bruises on his hand. Sabna was later transferred to a nearby hospital for medical treatment in the towns of Barta. His medical condition was described as stable. Sabna told Wafa that he was beaten up and assaulted by Israeli settlers while he was standing on the main street near Umm al-Fahm waiting for a bus.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
All 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe, it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean, so children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, Flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and Silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
Since the start of its genocide in Gaza, Israel has imposed a comprehensive blockade on the Strip and prevented supplies of food, water, fuel, and other humanitarian necessities from reaching the more than 2.3 million residents of the Strip. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon has intensified since October 7 and has included cutting off all food supplies to Gazans, as well as bombing and destroying the Strip's bakeries, factories, food stores.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount.
About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people.
Speeches and statements from Israeli officials promoting a campaign to deliberately block access to necessary resources for the Gaza population as a strategy indicate that Israel has not made these intentions a secret. The Israeli blockade, on top of the genocidal aggression, has plunged Gaza into humanitarian catastrophe, where lack of access to sanitation and safe water has increased the prevalence of waterborne diseases. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court says that intentionally starving civilians by, quote, depriving them of objects indispensable to their survival, including willfully impeding relief supplies, is a war crime.
The people in the hospitals, yes, they need everything. They need medical supplies, but what they ask for first is food and water, the very basics. They do not have them. One of my colleagues described people lying on the floor in severe pain, in agony, but they weren't asking for pain relief, they were asking for water.
The plight of Gaza's 2.3 million people has become desperate amid the war. Around 80% of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip have been displaced by the violence, while efforts to get aid into the territory have struggled. Alarmed humanitarian organizations have been calling for a ceasefire and denouncing the shocking cost of the catastrophic war, which amounts to a collective punishment of the civilian population of Gaza.
We are homeless. We can't go back to our houses. I want to see my children. I want to go back to my husband and to my house. It's unfair. It's so unfair.
Israel's economy is now in a crisis as it was hit by a double whammy this year, the so-called judicial overhaul and the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. Local stocks have underperformed global stocks this year. At the beginning of the year, the local stock market was shadowed by growing political uncertainty around the proposed judicial overhaul. The planned proposal sparked fears that the changes to the regime's legal system would threaten the independence of the judiciary and make business and investments less predictable. Over the course of the year, total equity raised from the public plunged to about 8.2 billion shekels from 21.7 billion shekels in 2022, while the average daily trading volume was down 12% year on year. The public withdrew a massive 30 billion shekels from funds that invest in shares and bonds in Tel Aviv, and poured 20.5 billion shekels into funds that invest in securities abroad. And following Israel's genocide in Gaza and the ensuing hostilities, Israeli securities initially dropped and the shekel plunged to the weakest level in more than a decade.
The social media platform X has provided a vital lifeline to journalists debunking Israel's disinformation around its genocidal war on Gaza. Several lies that Israeli occupation forces pushed out were immediately discredited by investigative journalists on the site. For that reason, Elon Musk is simultaneously a key ally and target of the Zionist regime. Musk has been mobilized against by key Zionist lobby groups like the Anti-Defamation League and the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And it is likely that his visit was an opportunity for the Zionist regime to apply more pressure on him to censor the social media platform. During the short pause in Israel's bombing of Gaza, the billionaire owner of the platform X, Elon Musk, traveled to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for an indoctrination session. While in occupied Palestine, he was taken on a guided tour of the Gaza settlement envelope by Netanyahu. A solemn picture was taken with Musk looking down at a baby cot, supposedly littered with bullets from the Palestinian resistance. However, it was revealed that those bullets matched those coming from Israeli tanks rather than Palestinian fighters. And as the war of disinformation continues, large U.S. corporations like Walt Disney, Warner Brothers, and Comcast suspended their ads on X in protest against his alleged anti-Semitism. This has, of course, been lobbied for by Israel's spy agency, the Anti-Defamation League, for some time. The U.S. government has even issued a statement condemning Musk for the abhorrent promotion of anti-Semitic and racist hate. In October, when Israel cut all electronic communications in Gaza, Musk offered to provide his Starlinks to internationally recognized aid organizations in the Strip. This infuriated the Israelis, who vetoed the idea immediately. While on his trip to the settler entity, Musk commented to Israeli President Isaac Herzog that he supported the idea of re-education camps in Gaza to prevent another generation of resistance. He also commented that he would help establish economic prosperity in the area. With the constant stream of contradictory messages, the battle for the soul of Elon Musk continues.
The World Health Organization has once again sounded the alarm on deepening humanitarian and medical crisis in war-torn Gaza. It has called on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing Palestinians in the besieged territory. According to the latest WHO assessments, Gaza has 13 partially functioning hospitals, 2 minimally functioning ones, and 21 that are not functioning at all.
There are actually no functional hospitals left in the north. Al-Ahli was the last one, but is now minimal functional. And still treating patients, but not admitting new ones, along with Al-Shifa, Al-Ada, and Al-Sahaba Hospital. So these hospitals are still sheltering also thousands of displaced people. At Al-Ahli, about 10 staff, all junior doctors and nurses, continue to provide basic first aid, pain management, as much as possible, wound care, and trauma stabilization services.
The Nasser Medical Complex, which is the most important referral hospital in southern Gaza, is partially functioning. The world body has expressed concern about reports of residential areas being ordered to evacuate around the hospital, which are extremely concerning. According to WHO reports and eyewitness accounts, when military activities intensify near the hospital, ambulances, patients, staff, and WHO and partners are unable to reach the complex. The world body has also said that it is working to strengthen and expand the existing struggling health system.
WHO will keep striving to supply health facilities in the northern Gaza, but without fuel, staff, and other essential needs, medicines, medicines won't make a difference, and all patients will die slowly and painfully.
It has also expressed concern about the fresh wave of displacement of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip who have been pushed by Israel to move to further south. It says the displacement of people will further strain health facilities in the south, which are already struggling to meet the population's immense needs. The WHO statement read, "This forced mass movement of people will also lead to more overcrowding, increase the risk of infectious diseases, and make it even harder to deliver humanitarian aid. Most of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are grappling with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and severe risk of disease." WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom has also repeated a call on the international community to, quote, take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza. The remarks come a day after the WHO staff went on a high-risk mission to deliver humanitarian supplies to the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza and Al-Amal Palestine Red Crescent Society in southern Gaza. Both hospitals serve as shelters for displaced Palestinians seeking safety amid relentless Israeli bombardment. At Al-Shifa Hospital, a reported 50,000 people are sheltering, while 14,000 others are at Al-Amal.
Seeing children, women, young men, old men and women, people bleeding out. I, at the same time yesterday at Al-Aqsa, I saw a woman who had multiple gunshot wounds. An attempt was made to refer her, and she was referred back because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere in these hospitals at the moment. We're seeing almost only trauma cases come through the door, and at a scale that's quite difficult to believe. It's a bloodbath, as we said before. It's carnage.
They have been injured and have been in the hospital for 10 days. As soon as the Israeli troops withdrew, I rushed to take them. As you can see, they suffer from total burns for no reason. They were left with no food or water and no care. There are other injured members of my family, but I wasn't able to carry them. After I arrived at the hospital, I witnessed massive destruction, an indescribable scene. Patients are scattered in every corner, beds are overturned, and medical material are damaged.
Comments come as Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. From corpses lying unattended on the streets, to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7 are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The death toll in the coastal territory since the Israeli regime launched its indiscriminate aerial and ground attacks nearly 3 months ago is now over 21,000, most of them children and women. Almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours. The barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian facilities.
This is really the worst thing that U.S. and Israel could do to Palestinians. The genocide is and the heinous war crimes are gone unnoticed.
Limelight. Firms profiting from Gaza genocide will take part in London Weapons Fair later this month. Such an event would be sinister at any time. That is being organized while a genocide is being carried out in Gaza adds a new layer of immorality. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "War gaming, firepower, lethality, robotics. All these topics will be discussed at a major weapons fair in London later this month. Such an event would be sinister at any time. That is being organized while a genocide is being carried out in Gaza, adds a new layer of immorality. Rafael and Elbit Systems, leading players in the Zionist regime's arms industry, are sponsors of International Armored Vehicles, as the exhibition and conference is called. The short profiles of these firms in the event's official program do not mention that they are Israeli. Representatives of Elbit are scheduled to give a presentation titled Iron Fist. Iron Fist is the brand name of surveillance equipment and interceptors which Elbit has made for a spanking new armored vehicle known as the Eitan. The Eitan is being used by the Zionist regime during its current invasion of Gaza. Not content with the horrors it is inflicting on Palestinians at present, the Zionist regime is hoping to unveil new killing machines in the near future. On New Year's Day, the weapons trade publication Israel Defense published a puff piece about Technological Brigade for Land. The human and professional composition of the brigade is extraordinary, it claimed. Boasting thousands of servicemen and women and 484 engineers, few other divisions in Israel's military have professional staff at such high levels, it claimed. The brigade has been working closely with the combat units fighting in Gaza to provide them with real-time technological innovations. The Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz, which is claimed to have a reputation for being more independent and critical. Some of its recent coverage has nonetheless amounted to free advertising for the Zionist regime's war industry. A Haaretz article, which appeared a few days ago, noted that the war in Gaza and expected increases in military spending are providing new opportunities for defense startups. Never mind that starvation is rising in Gaza. The war is a boon to the Zionist regime's small businesses, the paper's supposedly liberal readers were told. Or at least that was the subliminal message. The trendy topic of artificial intelligence is expected to feature prominently in the discussions at the aforementioned London Weapons Fair. It is a safe bet that its participants will be eager to find out more about Gospel, an Israeli system using artificial intelligence to identify targets. Gospel had previously been tested during the May 2021 attack on Gaza, which the Jerusalem Post dubbed the world's first artificial intelligence war. Supporters of the Zionist regime like to gloat about how their beloved regime has fostered a culture of impatient innovation. The Zionist regime's impatient innovators are now rushing to assist a genocide. Meanwhile, Press TV reported U.S. President Joe Biden administration has, for a second time in less than a month, bypassed Congress in order to approve an emergency weapons sale to the Zionist regime, despite growing international outrage over Washington's support for the Tel Aviv regime's genocidal war on Gaza. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was cited by the State Department as saying in a statement recently that he had made a second emergency determination covering $147.5 million sale of arms to the Zionist regime amid Tel Aviv's ongoing war in Gaza. Blinken said the Zionist regime had requested that fuses, charges, and primers of 155-millimeter high-explosive artillery munitions be added to previous purchases, increasing their estimated total cost from $96.51 million to $147.5 million and requiring a new notification. The sale was approved under an emergency provision that waives the usual congressional review. The same provision was used earlier in December to approve the sale of nearly 14,000 rounds of 120-millimeter tank ammunition, which is worth more than $106 million. The U.S. State Department said, given the urgency of Israel's needs, the secretary notified Congress that he had exercised his delegated authority to determine an emergency existed, necessitating the immediate approval of the transfer, stressing that the United States is committed to the security of Israel. The recent emergency determination comes as the U.S. regime and its Western allies are pressing ahead with their financial and logistical support to the Zionist regime in its brutal aggression against Gaza since early October. The United States has since supplied the Tel Aviv regime with more than 10,000 tons of military equipment and used its veto power against all United Nations Security Council resolutions that called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The international rights advocacy groups as well as Palestinian resistance movements have described Washington as an accomplice in the Zionist regime's genocidal war. The Tel Aviv regime launched the devastating war on Gaza on October 7th after the territory's Palestinian resistance groups carried out a surprise retaliatory attack dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the occupying entity. The relentless Israeli regime military campaign against Gaza has claimed the lives of more than 22,000 people, most of them children and women. Over 56,000 individuals have also been wounded, with thousands more believed, lost, and buried under the rubble. The United Nations has described the situation in Gaza as beyond catastrophic, with residents struggling to find food, water, and fuel while living in crowded shelters or tents.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فوجه
السلام عليكم and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we are again with brother Fawad Haider, Hassan Nasrullah, Hussein Rohullah, and Ali Nasir. Assalamu alaikum, brothers. Welcome.
Wa alaikum salam.
Are you fine, everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Inshallah. So, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, we hope, inshallah, you are also safe and sound, happy and wealthy, inshallah. So, today, the same as our previous sessions, we will talk about one of the verses of the Quran. We'll have a short explanation, but the most important point in our class is that we will focus on the tajweed rules practically, inshallah. We'll mention and we'll practice. Then, inshallah, we'll recite the Quran Karim, that ayah, with tajweed rules, okay? So, brothers and sisters, as you're listening, please, inshallah, stay with us till the end of this session. So, in this session, inshallah, we will talk about ayah 185 of Surah Ali Imran on page
74.
So, brothers and sisters, turn to page 74, ayah 185 of Surah Ali Imran. And first and foremost, let's everybody listen to the recitation.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Kullu nafsin dha'iqatul maut. Wa innama tuwaffawna ujurakum yawmal qiyamah. فَمَنْ زُحْزِحَ عَنِ النَّارِ وَأُدْخِلَ الْجَنَّةَ فَقَدْ فَازَ وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الْغُرُورِ
Nice recitation, mashallah. May Allah bless the reciter. So brothers and sisters, remember that stay with us, inshallah, till the end of this session. We'll practice the tajweed rules and also the recitation as well. Right after we mention some points about this ayah. All right? Fawad?
Yes.
Let's go. So, Allah Almighty in ayah 185 says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم كل نفس ذائقة الموت وَإِنَّمَا تُوَفَّوْنَ أُجُورَكُمْ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فَمَنْ زُحْزِحَ عَنِ النَّارِ وَأُدْخِلَ الْجَنَّةَ فَقَدْ فَازَ وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الْغُرُورِ So, very, very beautiful ayah. Very beautiful ayah. Allah Almighty tells us about an important issue. Sometimes people might be afraid of death. Afraid of what happens to him after he dies, right? Or even sometimes people might not believe in death. Yes? Or they might believe this way, that if he dies, it's over. It's over for him. So he's all over. He's not going to experience any other life after his death, okay? He's not going to see anything, hellfire or heaven. They might not believe this way. So there are different groups of people having different thoughts about, having different beliefs about death. All right? So the thing is that Allah Almighty makes it very clear. Says what? كل نفس ذائقة الموت. What does it say? It's Allah Almighty says, every single soul shall taste death. Human beings, animals, every single thing in the world. When it's going to... Also, we see, yes, a lot of people have died, and a lot of people will die. Yes, we will also experience death. It's something, it's a truth. So if somebody believes this way, that death is a truth, and it's going to happen to him, huh? It's going to happen sooner or later. We might die right now. We might die in a second. We might die in a minute. We might die in a year. We might die in 10 years later. We might die, for example, 100 years later. We don't know the time of our death, okay? But we will experience it sooner or later. This is a fact that happens, okay? So you can't run away from death. Yes? Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, I think, was confronting Namrud. Okay? Namrud was saying that I'm the God. I'll kill your God. Who is your God? Call him. I'll fight him. Yes? He was saying. Then Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam was saying that my God is the one who brings the sun from the east, for example. Yeah? This way he talks about the sun and the moon. And then Namrud, okay, was kind of confused or didn't have anything to say. Oh, that God. Then Prophet Ibrahim said, if you are God, bring the sun from the west. Namrud had nothing to say. Then Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam said, my God is the one who brings death to life and gives death to the living things. Prophet Ibrahim said, do it if you are God. Ask Namrud. Namrud couldn't do anything. Right? So Namrud even did not believe in death, did not believe in God, okay? That's why he was confronting. But if we believe in death, and we believe that it comes from God, what do? We will strengthen our belief. We'll go for the things that Allah Almighty has told us to do. We'll try to have up with ourselves like a bunch of things, like good deeds, yes? Like you are having a trip, okay? For example, to Mashhad, for example, to any other countries, to Karbala, to Mecca. What do? Will you just wake up and go? Huh? No, you'll get something with yourself. Your passports, your visa, for example, some money with you, for example, some, like, what do you call it? Some snacks with you, some, like, clothes with you, yes? You will have something with you. Yeah? A luggage you will have with you.
Yeah.
So the same thing. If somebody believes in death, that he will die and he will go to the next world, he will visit the day of judgment. Huh? He will see the judgment of God. So what should he do? He will for sure get some stuff with him. Yes? So what is that stuff? Good deeds. Al-A'mal al-Salih. Yes? Al-A'mal al-Salih. Alright? So we should have this one, inshallah. Okay? Because kullu nafsin dha'iqatul maut. Wa innama tuwaffawna ujurakum yawm al-qiyamah. In the day of judgment, and you will indeed be paid your full rewards on the day of resurrection. فَمَنْ زُحْزِهَ عَنِ النَّارِ Whoever is delivered from the fire, he rescues himself from the fire, okay? With the amal al-salih. And admitted to paradise, and he is given the permission to enter the Jannah, the one who is saved from the hellfire, and is allowed to enter Jannah, for sure, فَقَدْ فَازَ He has certainly succeeded. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الْغُرُورِ The life of this world is nothing but the wares of delusion. It's just something you will have it for some days, okay? You'll not have it forever. يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق
Let's mention some tajweed rules and practice the recitation, the tafsir points that we said. Inshallah, you can learn more about them in the tafsir books. Okay, Hassan, Hussein, Ali, Nasir, Fawad.
Yes.
And our
yes.
brothers and sisters who have been listening. So, the first important tajweed rule is the pronunciation of some letters here in this ayah that our brothers and sisters must pay close attention. Kullu nafsin dha'iqa tul mawti. So this dhal, qaf, important. Wa innama wa, okay? Tuwaffawna ujurakum hamza. Ujurakum. This is simple. يوم القيامة فمن زحزح not زحزح right زحزح عن النار وأدخل الجنة فقد قاف and also فمن زحزح عن النار عين is important فقد فاز وما الحياة الدنيا إلا متاع العين غرور غين. So these letters are important. Make sure, inshallah, you pronounce them correctly. Now, كل نفس ذائقة الموت. نفس has got a تنوين with it. نفس ends with a تنوين. So the next letter that comes after the تنوين or نون ساكن, this is important. It changes the way we read the word, okay? So if the letter is one of these six letters, the letter after the tanween or after the nun sakin, if the letters are one of these, ya romalun letters, ya ra mim lam waw nun, you apply the rule idgham, you merge the sound, you merge the sound. If the letters, if the letter is one of these six letters, hamza, ha, ha, kha, ayn, ghain, you change nothing. Just read the way the tanween is pronounced, in, an, in, un. The way noon is pronounced, an in un, n sound. If you got one letter and that's ba, you change the sound of the tanween, the noon sound, n sound, to a meme sound, n sound. And the rest of the letters, if they appear after the tanween or noon sakin, so you hide the sound of the noon. N sound, you hide it, n sound. So fa is, val is one of those letters that you hide the sound of the tanween. Let's move on. كل نفس نفس hide the sound of تنوين ذائقة الموت ذائقة the ألف مد ذا إي the حمزة they are in the same word
yeah.
Okay so the مد is
واجب
you should stretch it for six counts ذائقة الموت موت has a lean sound أو sound Not moot, no, maut. So, the qila tells you it's better to stop, but you still can continue. Wa innama, in the previous session, we said nun mushaddad must produce a nasal sound and extend the sound for two counts. Innama, yes, tuwaffawna ujurakum yawmal qiyamati. If you stop, the tad is changed to ha, and the harakat is changed to sukun qiyamah. Sila is just opposite to qila, tells you it's better to continue. فَمَنْ زُحْزِحَ Look, nun sakin plus za. Za is with like dhal, okay, from the same group. So hide the sound of nun. فَمَنْ زُحْزِحَ عَنِ النَّارِ Nun mushattad. وَأُدْخِلَ Dal is pronounced with an?
قَلْقَلَ
son. An echoing sound. Ud. أدخل الجنة فقد again قلقلة فاز وما الحياة الدنيا الدنيا is an exceptional word دنيا you can't merge it دنيا إلا متاع الغرور that's it we mentioned the important tajweed rules now I will recite inshallah with tajweed rules make sure inshallah you listen carefully and repeat alright ready
yes
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
كل نفس ذائقة الموت
كل نفس ذائقة الموت
وإنما توفون أجوركم يوم القيامة فمن زحزح عن النار وأدخل الجنة فقد فاز وما الحياة الدنيا إلا متاع الغرور صدق الله العلي العظيم
Ahsantum,
brothers and sisters, thank you so much for being with us till the end of this session. Inshallah, we'll be here with you again. Stay with IRB English Radio. Thanks to IRB English Radio and Sevier International Schools Network. Thanks to Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasser. Inshallah, see you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.